brother. Oh, what's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother,
dig it.
Solid. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work, so I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
We've got to get a fire in our ass.
A lot of things that are easily correctable.
What the hell's going on out here?
Violence is out of the question.
All this negativity that's in this town sucks.
This is for all the Tostitos.
On the brink, leader fan radio network.
What do you mean?
And KFAN.com. 2 minutes, 41 seconds past 3 o'clock Central Standard Time. We welcome you back bumper to bumper. It's a Friday edition of the program. It's a scheduled 3.5 hour tour on a rather chilly Friday afternoon here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm the host of the program. My name is Dan Barrero. I'm joined today for the first consecutive day by Justin Gard, who's had some pretty interesting travel stories, which we might get into a little later in the show. Whether he's traveling by car or traveling by plane, it has not been uneventful for the young man. We'll get into more of that later.
Real quick, because this is my first show in a row.
Yes.
Like, if the Wolves won 4 out of 5, you'd call that a good streak, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I mean, for the week, for the first week of 2022, I was here 4 out of 5 days. I think that's decent.
It's okay.
It's not perfect.
I'd like streaks. I'd like, in a row.
I understand.
And that got ruined yesterday.
I understand.
How about this upcoming week? What are we looking at?
I'll miss a day next week, too. Wednesday.
Funny.
Wednesday, they'll be in Madison.
Okay. That you're only going to milk that for one? And Wisconsin, by the way, that's... their women's team is awful.
Women's team, not very good. Their men's team, awful. On the come.
It's through the roof.
On the rise.
Who's this phenom they have who might end up being, who might be the best player in the single player in the league?
The Johnny Davis, I think that's his name.
He's off the charts.
Yeah, he's absurd.
Everybody in the Big Ten who knows anything about the Big Ten's talking about him and raving about him.
Yes. Truth cannot be controversial.
I think they're third or fourth in the Big Ten early. Long way to go between now and then. Bradshaw and Brian Inbox, I should say, is open and available to you. Booth@KFAN.com. Let me also do one other piece of housekeeping that we mentioned once late in the show 2 days ago, because I got a couple tweets about this. I'm glad it put it back in my head. Apparently, and I'm going to go conspiracy, because apparently we were the only show, fan show affected.
No. Is that true?
That's what the tweeter suggested.
Oh, okay.
That he was suddenly, there were no more bumper-to-bumper shows being loaded past like 12/21, 2021. And he's like, what gives? I know you're still on the air.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned a belief that the best way out of the box is for folks to unsubscribe to Bumper to Bumper.
If you're doing Apple, iTunes.
Yes.
Yep.
And then resubscribe and all as well. And a number of people have responded in kind to say, yeah, that seems to take care of it for me. So if that's a problem, if you subscribe to our show via iTunes, Apple, and you're saying, well, what happened? Just unsubscribe and resubscribe. That's actually often the solution in lots of these
that's right.
complicating
Just
situations.
Just restart it.
Yeah, restart it.
Yeah.
And you should be okay. Why we're the only show that was affected, I have no idea. Doesn't surprise me. But apparently it was just us.
We'll write it down.
Yeah.
We'll remember it.
Well, it's on the list.
We've noted it.
It's definitely on the...
It'll come up.
On the list.
It'll come up for sure.
What do we have in store for you today? Power Pack broadcast. I'm not sure how Gerby's going to take this. I'll be honest with you. I'm a bit nervous.
I can't even reach him either. That's
about
the problem.
That. Well, he may be pouting already just thinking about it because the word might have gotten through to him that I sent out a tweet that our 3:30 scheduled guest today is not Carl Gerbschmidt and the Picks, but Russo Radio. The plan is for Gerby and the Picks to begin at about 3:55. Ben Gessling's 4:30. Lavelle is scheduled for 5:30 this evening. That is the Borton Volvo guest lineup for today. A fairly heavy toy department today. There might be some exceptions to exactly that rule. I'm going to need some help from you.
Uh-oh.
Regarding a story that Rosen mentioned to me on the way out. He's leaving. I'm coming towards the studio. And he mentioned something about a new potential Aaron Rodgers controversy.
Yeah, I was going to mention that to you.
About whether he might be threatening a Super Bowl boycott. Now, I think the source is Pro Football Talk. And they're quoting, apparently, Boomer Esiason, correct?
Exactly right,
so
yes.
So, can you flesh out, before we go any further, can you flesh out the details on exactly what the allegation is or what might be prompting a threatened boycott by A-Rodge?
Here's the story as I understand it. Your guy, Boomer,
okay,
who works on WFAN.
He's on with Sedano and Stink, isn't he? No, that's a different show on a different network.
He loves Sedano and Stink.
I always have.
Remember we had Stink right next to us in Radio Row?
Stink was a tremendous. As a player, I remember interviewing him many times and in groups. Not a lot of one-on-ones with him, and he was always outstanding.
You know, speaking of Stink, I've gotten a couple of Stink submissions for some product that he's hawking the last couple of weeks.
Seriously.
Should we try to get Stink on the next time I get one of those?
What's his real name, by the way?
Mark Schlereth.
Mark Schlereth, exactly.
Mark
Schlereth. The very accomplished offensive lineman, Denver Broncos, correct?
Yes. Now, what Boomer said...
Who had, like, his claim to fame, what put him on the map with media members was, over the course of his career, he had something like 57 surgeries. He was one of those guys who was constantly under the knife for something, but continued to plow through it, continued to perform, continued to excel. And he was very good at articulating the entire process. Not surprising that he would go on from a football career to analysis, radio, etc., and even some TV, I think.
So Boomer gets a text during his morning show today from a source who claims that Rodgers will threaten to boycott the Super Bowl if the Packers make it.
A lot of divas.
If the NFL doesn't eliminate some of the COVID protocols. Rodgers, according to Florial now, who picked up on this because he does on everything.
Yes.
Especially Aaron Rodgers related.
Yes.
Rodgers particularly doesn't like the rule that compels testing of asymptomatic players. Esiason didn't name his source. His co-host Greg Giannotti.
Well, I actually asked the same question. Why are we tempting? Why would we be testing asymptomatic players when we're not currently? Are we
currently all unvaccinated players are tested daily, regardless
so you're
of
talking
symptoms?
About, okay, well, I didn't hear that part of it. That's, yeah, unvaccinated.
And
yes.
I didn't say that part. That's what he means by why are we testing anybody if we don't have symptoms?
Well,
if you're not vaccinated, that's what they are doing.
Okay, gotcha.
Esiason didn't reveal the name of his source, as I mentioned. His co-host asked, is it someone we should be trusting with their information? Esiason said, I would. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is stupid.
Well, it's the most absurd.
It's so stupid.
Let me put it this way. If this were to come to fruition, the Packers were to get to the Super Bowl, and Aaron Rodgers would boycott, you know who's vindicated? Hub Arkish. Hub Arkish is non A-Rod's MVP vote, he'd look like a hero.
That's true.
He'd look like he was way ahead of it.
Yeah. Roger Goodell would probably say, you can't win this award. You ruined the Super Bowl.
Can you imagine what, I guess you could say, a villain, an enemy, a pariah he would become in the state of Wisconsin? Instantly, he could turn from heroic to get rid of the bum. They'd call him a bum, which is what A-Rod was calling Hub Arkin.
It's true. Now I really want it to happen. Now I might pull for the Packers, which you know
just
is
to see
not
this thing
easy.
Play out.
That would be great, but that's never going to happen.
Well, no, you know what's happening here. Eventually, Rodgers will address it,
yep.
And he'll say, yeah, I might have leaked that to somebody. I might have mentioned that to somebody. Just try to get people's attention just how the hypocrisy of this whole process here that we're making up the rules as we go along, right? Don't you think?
More or less.
What he'll do with it. He'll say it was just my way of rattling some cages. Yeah, I'll probably show up for the Super Bowl. Unless he gets COVID again.
But is he still within his 90-day window?
Oh, yeah, and he's immunized.
He's been immunized,
Been immunized. I forgot about that.
So who knows?
That's true.
The whole thing's confusing.
It is very confusing.
And one thing I know is A-Rod is not skipping the Super Bowl.
No. It'd be the biggest story in Super Bowl history if he did. I mentioned off the top of the program that we are indeed your franchise on the brink leader. I don't want to dramatize it. I don't want to be too melodramatic, but I don't think you can. It is my firm belief that the Minnesota Vikings, present and future, will all be determined, or to a large extent be determined, by decisions made the next few days. You cannot dramatize or over-dramatize the significance of whatever the Wilfs choose to do. We'll get into some specifics on that, and also some specifics on why Mike Zimmer needs to be stopped. People need to stop treating Mike Zimmer as if he's some kind of a martyr, and so much more. Good guest lineup as well, and as I mentioned, if Gerby isn't pouting too much, we'll get to the picks eventually.
Insurance company and affiliates.
The Fan.
On the brink. Wherever you are on bringing back the entire brain trust or half of the brain trust or the half of the brain trust in Cousins or find a way to send Cousins away, whatever it is, whatever your view is, this is a big weekend. Those decisions, the direction that the Wilfs ultimately choose to go, are pretty crucial about how this thing is going to go moving forward. I don't think you can exaggerate that part of it. I don't have any idea. Allegedly, there's going to be meetings I think tomorrow. That's one of the stories. There might be some meetings. How official they are or unofficial they are, I don't have any idea. But there's a big difference between quote-unquote staying the course and blowing it up. There's even grades of difference, obviously, don't blow it up, but you just get rid of the coach. Then it's, all right, who's the next guy going to be? What direction are you going next? How do you view Cousins because of his contract as an automatic return? Or do you say, we're not sure that's sustainable, and we might even be willing to take with a new coach who's going to get a little bit of time, a sidestep as we rectify the quarterback situation? We've talked about our own views on this particular issue several times. I don't know that I need to go too far down that road again. What I do want to mention here, though, in the remaining minutes of this segment, is that what's happening or what might be happening. Well, no, it is happening. When I say what's happening to Mike Zimmer right now is a question about whether he's going to be the guy moving forward. Let's leave Spielman out of it for the moment. Let's just make this about the head coach. This is not social media based. This is not some new concept in the National Football League that a coach who's had some success finds himself under fire with some questioning, not necessarily saying he's got to go, but questioning the direction, the position the team is in now, and perhaps even to a certain extent, the vision of the team for the future. Because that can also be part of the concern. It's been good at times, but now we've got two straight seasons where we've missed the playoffs, and we can explain our way out of all of it if you want to. If you want to go down that road, you can explain it all away. But what is the evidence that, and what's the vision for how we get out of this morass, this sort of middle ground, one could say, that we're in? Now, is there more that we can see regarding debate and opinion online because online exists? Of course. But I can tell you, man, because I was here going all the way back to, I wasn't here for Steckel, but I was here for Burnsy, and I obviously was here for Denny. And I don't remember Twitter being a factor when Burnsy was head coach.
Right.
I don't remember it being a factor when Denny was the head coach. And I can tell you that emotions were raw, opinions were all over the map, and everybody was talking about it. You just didn't know it as much because they didn't, that those vehicles did not exist. This is nothing new. Burnsy got the Vikings to the NFC title game. And almost, I mean, he had a shot to at least tie it to send it into OT to get to the bowl. And he got canned. And by the way, he also had the disadvantage of playing in a conference that was dominated by Bill Walsh, Steve Young, well, Joe Montana. Even more importantly, it's
Jerry Rice,
et cetera, et cetera. Guess what? Questions set in. Is this going anywhere? Is he the right guy? Is it time for a change? Change was made. To this day, you can say it shouldn't have been, but the change was made. Denny Green won 61% of his games here. That's second best winning percentage in team history. 61%. Got to a pair of NFC title games. Was a 10-point favorite in one of them. The one here, obviously.
And Anderson hasn't missed in 2 years.
41 Donut was the other one there. We get that. And guess what? As things went south, frustration set in, and the debate took place without social media. And ultimately, Denny was dismissed. Was it the right move? You can argue to this day that they'd have been better off keeping Denny and trying to ride through it. Brad Childress, as unpopular as he is, he got us to an NFC title game and probably should have won that one. He got us a lot closer than Mike Zimmer has. Not as good a regular season record. I'm not here to defend Brad Childress's honor, but the fact of the matter is, now it hasn't happened often in this team's history because Bud was the one guy who was above all of that.
And that's a fact.
And he had the equity of going to the Super Bowl four times. Towards the end, his regular season records, if you look at them, they weren't great. But Bud was never going to get fired and probably didn't deserve to ever get fired given all the equity he had. But after that, and even before that, it comes with the territory, man. It's part of the deal. There's not any kind of odd conspiracy against Zimmer. Other than the only reason it feels different is he's here. And we've all gotten to know him to varying degrees. And that's fine, but that doesn't, it's all the idea that there's head scratching going on. Why are we even talking about this? Who's talking about this? If you miss the playoffs, the way the league is set up, especially now, but even then, through any of these stretches, if Burnsy or Denny missed the playoffs 3 out of 4 years, there was going to be conversation about where is this going? And believe me when I tell you, there is that conversation even among football people internally. They might lie and say otherwise, but it is. And in the end, they might all say, stay the course. I heard your guy, Chad Greenway, he's a big Zimmer guy. I respect that. I respect the opinion that it doesn't have to be he's got to have his head lopped off, that he has to go. But this stuff is not manufactured. It's not embroidered. It's not made out of, you know, sort of thin air that people are sort of making this stuff up. It's happened, and it's happened in this organization several times, and Twitter had nothing to do with it. Social media had nothing to do with it. It's just part of what, unfortunately, if you want to say, because of all the ways people can debate these things, that makes it seem like it's worse. I will tell you, I've said this to you before, I'm not convinced people were any less angry 20, 30, 40 years ago. I think we convince ourselves that they're angrier now. But the only reason we think that is because we can see now what people are saying.
We never get a break from
it. We didn't get a chance to see what people might have tweeted 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And I'm telling you, I mean, go back to the Bob Schnelker stuff with Bernsey. Somebody had a fire, was it a fire Schnelker sign in the crowd? Whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yep.
Schnelker's name ever came up as the offensive coordinator. He got booed mercilessly to the point where Bernsey went off. I think we've played the sound. We talked to the late great Bernsey about this before in this studio, about how loyal he was to, how frustrated and angry he was about that. My point is, once again, that wasn't driven by social media. It's just part of the territory when you're the most popular team in the town that folks are going to have opinions. And quite frankly, that teams make decisions all the time to say, it's a pretty good run, but I think we're kind of going sideways, or it feels like we might need to have somebody with a fresh look. And by the way, there's no guarantee the next guy is going to be better.
Right.
Part of the due diligence is, what is our plan going to be? How comfortable are we with what we got potentially on the other end? Go back to when Woody Norwood Teague fired
Tubby Smith.
Yep. That firing, I think, was defensible on the basis of sort of the ennui that is set in the program, and the sense of, well, I don't know, is he in this for, where is this going? But the mistake Teague made was he thought he had a plan. He thought he had access to some much bigger coaching names than he did, and it ended up being, in retrospect, not a good move because he had not prepped properly and was left with a scramble just to find somebody to be a head coach of the club, right? So all of that stuff should factor in. But the idea that, well, boy, the new person's always better, right? No. But on that basis, no coach would ever be changed, including, by the way, offensive coordinators. I would say to Mike Zimmer, you could say the same thing to Zimmer and say, well, is new always better, Mike? Maybe you may just have to retool with the guy you have and try to work some things out. Well, obviously Zimmer said, no, sometimes you got to make a change. By that logic, an owner or general manager, if he's making this decision, whatever it is, it has the right to talk about changes. And these don't happen in a vacuum. The Vikings have not had sustained success the last 4 or 5 years. They just haven't. 3 out of 4 we've missed, correct?
Yeah, and that's what I was getting. The second to last thing you said, we're kind of insulated from it because, however you want to say it, Vikings are one of the best organizations that have never been to the Super Bowl, right? They've been to the playoffs yes. a million times. They've never really had that many bottoming out seasons where you're constantly churning and making
That's
change.
True.
That's been one of the nice things about being a Vikings fan is you kind of always think you're in the mix. Now, we know in my lifetime, we're also one of like 3 teams that have never been to the Super Bowl in my lifetime from the NFC, which is the frustrating part. But in any other city, in any other town, if your head coach and general manager tandem has missed the playoffs 3 out of the last 4 years, there's going to be a lot of talk about making changes. I just don't know if we're necessarily accustomed to it all the time because, for the most part, we've had relative success with all of our head coaches. And towards the end, you start making a change. So it's almost like we're out of practice with the whole thing.
That's a lot of it.
Because it really doesn't come up. But 3 out of 4 years, like, absolutely. Every sports talk station's talking about it. Every fan's tweeting about it. It's certainly worth being on the table.
Yeah, and I'll say again, most teams are talking about it. The teams themselves are talking about it. The owners are talking about it. Now, is there too much of a quick switch? Absolutely. That's also going to be part of the discussion, but it isn't just sort of this sort of all these outside forces are driving this stuff. And it's like, well, wait a minute. performance of the team itself is to a large extent driving this. I mean, we've made, how many different ways have we made history this year? I saw this stat. I assume it's accurate. The 2021 Vikings are the first team in NFL history to have a quarterback with 30-plus passing TDs, a running back with 1,000-plus rushing yards, a wide receiver with 1,500-plus receiving yards, and a losing record to show for it. Not a losing record.
What the hell's going on out here?
A chance to be 7-10. You know, the whole turnover thing, which we end up even losing most of our games when we win the turnover battle. All this stuff can be factored in, and you could play it either way. You could say, well, that's just, that'll never happen again, and that means we're actually a little bit better than you think we are. Or you can say, well, no, that's a sign of something else breaking down here that's just not very workable. Emailer John, Burns and Denny had ownership in turmoil. Zimmer has great ownership behind him. How does that fit into the narrative? Well, that's another good question, which we're going to get to a little bit later. We think we have great owners. We have great owners to the extent that they're committed financially and in every other way. The concern on them is, are they too hands off? And we'll get to more of that. There's this fine line between you don't want Jerry Jones, probably, but is there such a thing as being almost absentee-ish in terms of your level of commitment and I guess you could say dedication to the bit, that at a time like this might work against owners knowing, as we talked about yesterday, where to go if indeed they deem it necessary for changes to be made? We'll come back with Russo Radio. If you're looking for picks with Gerby, that'll be coming up at 3:55. But a very eventful night for Minnesota Wild. A very nice victory, a very nice rookie debut in his hometown, and another hockey cheap shot. We'll get to all of that and the current condition of our superstar goal scorer next.
Time now for the Vikings Report on the Fan, presented by Vizzy Hard Seltzer, official hard seltzer of the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings defensive coordinator Andre Patterson joins Barrero next, after this, from Vizzy Hard FAN.
Russo is back with us, and he's brought to you by the Pillbox Tavern. Joining us via the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline. Picks coming up at the top of the hour. I believe you just landed and are probably trying to get the car warmed up as we speak. I want to start with an email I received from Kevin. He writes, unless I heard wrong, the cheap shot on Thrill was applauded by Brian, is it Boucher? How do you pronounce it? On ESPN?
Oh, yeah, Boucher.
As a good play to, quote, go after the opponent's best player, and his team wouldn't care about a penalty. Please ask Russo if he or others heard the same.
I didn't hear it, but I saw a bunch of tweets that that characterized it like that. So, you know, but I didn't hear it, and I didn't go back and listen. You know, I don't know the context that he said
right.
In. You know, my gut says that, you know, what he was probably saying is that you go after other teams' top players hard. So I don't know what he said or what he meant by it, but you know, they were clearly that's always been the Bruins' MO, and they were clearly all game long going after Kaprizov. We saw it on every faceoff. I mean, Frederik had been going after him all game. You know, that Blyde kid or however you pronounce it was leaning up against him on a face-off right before, a couple shifts before that as well. And that was my issue with the hit is, like, you know, look, you could say all he want that he was finishing his check and all that type of stuff, but the reality is that all game long he was going after Kaprizov hard, and clearly, you know, and I thought Dean Evason characterized it pretty accurately after the game. Like, you know, whether you want it, whether you're, you know, Bruins fans, the league obviously didn't think it was a dirty, cheap, illegal play. But the reality is that it was a play where he knew exactly what he was doing. He had Kaprizov in a vulnerable spot, and he decided instead of going for the puck, which is the objective on a hit. The reason why there are body checks in hockey is 100% to separate a player from the puck. Well, the puck was right there. All he had to do was grab the puck.
Correct.
And go. But that's never been Frederik's game. He's a fourth line plugger that, you know, hits guys and fights and things like that. And so what he did is instead of going for the puck, he decided to take a kid that was in a vulnerable spot and finish his check. Now, does that rise to the level of supplemental discipline? Obviously, the league today felt like it's not, but he definitely took advantage of the situation. I think it's the same thing that Hakanpää did to Eriksson Ek a couple weeks ago. He saw that that Eriksson Ek was in a vulnerable spot and decided instead of letting up to just finish his check there, hard in a dangerous spot, and it left him with a very similar injury, probably the exact same injury, in fact. And, you know, to me, it's a shame. But obviously the league didn't think that was illegal or they would have suspended Frederick by now. So okay, well, you know, it's unfortunate. And regardless of whether you think it's illegal or not, you know, it doesn't change the fact that the Wild are now without Kaprizov for a little bit here. And so hopefully it's not super, super long term. It didn't sound good today, but he's clearly not going to play tomorrow. And the hope is that now with, you know, the Wild not playing next week and then having a couple games against Anaheim, Colorado, Chicago, that maybe he could return soon after that. But I don't think he'll be in the lineup, you know, really here in the next couple weeks at least.
Here's what's interesting to me, and I'm very curious to get opinions from the hockey community out there, because there's some, you know, there's some old timers who get, I think, very frustrated about the effort to change, even to the degree to which the game has changed from a fighting standpoint from what it once was back in the heyday of fighting, although we certainly had enough fisticuffs last night to last us for about a month. But here's my honest belief, and I'm curious to get your view on it. We can argue about whether it rises to the level of suspension, but the whole mentality, as was laid out by the players after the game and even the announcers, is this is what bugs me. Until that part of that cultural piece of the game is changed, because Russo, it's the only game. It's the only game that plays by that rule, literally, of the pro sports. Until you get that out of there, this game's always going to be at a disadvantage. And I don't for the life of me understand why it's so difficult for it to be removed from the game's culture. Because to me, it still stains it. It still hurts it, whether the individual hit rises to a certain level of suspension or not. There's no other game where it's set up that way. And I'm trying to figure out why.
Well, I think a lot of it is that it's the only game also that there's really no out of bounds. I mean, you know, you have the boards and the game is to play hard, to play physical, to body check. But it is the only game where a superstar like Kaprizov could just get hurt and there's no repercussions. And then what happens is within the game, you feel like, well, then I either have to go after their star or I got to fight them. And, you know, from this kid's standpoint, I don't think having I was reading these old school, like, tweets, like, oh, it's because the Wild don't have a goon. Well, first of all, I mean, there's no goons in the NHL. And the other thing is that clearly having Foligno, who is a great fighter and kicked the kid's butt in the beginning of the third period, didn't stop the kid from, one, going after Kaprizov, or two, it was Frederick that actually challenged challenged Foligno,
right?
Because he went in, hit him hard, and high-sticked him, got the extra penalty. And so, I mean, the only way, unfortunately, to combat situations like this is just to beat them in the game, and that's what the Wild did. I mean, in my mind, Frederick cost that team the game last night. He took three stupid penalties in the game. Even though Boldy's goal wasn't a power play, it came right at, it came 2 minutes and 12 seconds after. So it came 12 seconds after the Frederick penalty expired. So they essentially got a power play goal on it. They scored two other actual power play goals in the game. And so that's unfortunately the way that you have to beat them. But it's frustrating. And it never changes. The game is still much, much cleaner from when I first started covering the game, when there were, you know, enforcers on every lineup and there were, you know, guys out there out trying to hurt players. And, in this situation, you know, clearly the Boston Bruins game plan going into last night's game was to go after guys like Zuccarello and Kaprizov. I mean, Frederick, the same thing. I mean, just to show you what type of kid he is, I mean, he's going after Zuccarello and ragdolling him there on the same shift that Blythe's going after Kaprizov a couple shifts before. I mean, it was just a stupid game that they played, and it cost them the game. And it's the reason why that Boston team is struggling right now. I mean, they have not been very good. They had won three in a row going into last night, but they haven't been very good. And, you know, the other really ironic thing that I was thinking about is that so Frederick is one of these five St. Louis first-round picks that was drafted along with Luke Cunningham. And how amazing it is that, like, remember Matt Tkachuk did really altered the season and the career of Matt Dumba, and he's one of Luke Cunningham's best friends. Well, this Frederick kid is also one of Luke Cunningham's best friends. It's just one of those weird things that I was thinking about after is how these two St. Louis buddies of Luke Cunningham have both altered, you know, really a wild season here. And,
well,
you know, the hope is that Kaprizov is not over. You know, look, we know that he obviously has a collarbone or a shoulder injury. The hope is that if it's a shoulder, there's no torn ligaments. If it's a collarbone, we've seen guys come back in 3 or 4 weeks. You know, we've seen Zucker do it. We've seen Kane do it. And so the hope is that this, you know, is not a long-term thing with Kaprizov. You know, I know that it didn't sound good this morning. He was going to see the doctor today, and hopefully it's just something here that he can come back. They have a lot of other bigger issues right now, believe it or not. I mean, the one thing I'm starting to hear, Dan, is that Jonas Brodin's injury could be really severe. And so that's the one thing that they were trying to figure out today as well. And so that is a huge concern for a team that also is without Jared Spurgeon.
Well, yeah. I mean, we were talking about this with the TV show, Guardsy and I. He was given the list of the walking wounded and just how dangerous a stretch this could be to sort of just stay afloat until you get all your reinforcements, including your goaltender back. To the point, though, on this particular controversy, even the comments from the kid after the game just confirms what a game this is, because he basically said, yeah, you know, if they'd have gone after our best guy like that, yeah, we probably would have done the same thing. And I continue to believe, and I don't know if you agree, that this can be eliminated by coaches and by general managers. It can be. If you flat out say, you're gone, if we go down this road, it'll change. But until that happens, it's as long as it's continued to sort of, even along the edges of a game that's certainly been cleaned up compared to what it once was, then it's not going to change unless the people in charge say, enough. We're not going to, there are ways to be physical with players.
Yeah.
We get that. And to try to concentrate on slowing down their best players and see how they handle the heat. That's all fair game. But this stuff hurts us. It ends up killing us because it can be used against us as well.
Well, I thought Zuccarello said it really well last night. As a fan of hockey, I want to see Kirill Kaprizov.
Exactly.
Not Trent Frederick. Now, he didn't say that. I'm saying that. But he said the Kaprizov thing.
Right.
And that is the issue. But you're 100% right. Like, Bruce Cassidy, who I do like. I mean, you know, he's been a good coach for a while. He's his second stint now in the NHL, I believe, as a head coach. He's been watching. You know, it was clearly his game plan to play Kaprizov hard. I mean, you know, and they smothered Fiala too. So that is the game plan by the Bruins, to go play these guys hard. I get it.
Yep.
And it was him after the game that said, like, I get the Wild's reaction being upset because we would be upset if they went after Bergeron or those guys. And so clearly, like, he basically telegraphed for us that that was the game plan going in. But the problem is when you have a guy like Frederick who could barely play the sport anyway, and when he's out there and knows for him to be in the lineup to get minutes, he's got to go and follow the game plan. He clearly took advantage of a situation where he saw Kaprizov was vulnerable. And again, when I look at that play, I completely agree with Dean Evason that the job there is to play the puck, and the kid didn't go after the puck. He went after Kaprizov, saw that he was in a vulnerable position. But the reality is that he saw he saw Kaprizov there and just decided to do what all coaches tell their players to do, and that is finish his check. And it wasn't your classic boarding penalty. It really didn't, you know, in my eyes and then clearly in the league's eyes, rise to the level of, you know, a nasty 5-minute major type boarding penalty. It was a 2-minute minor. The Wild essentially scored on the power play, which was the winning goal. And that was, in the league's mind, time served. But, you know, it is very, like, Dean is right. It's very clear what the kid was doing there. He saw him in a vulnerable position and decided, I'm not going to play the puck. I'm going to go finish my check. And unfortunately for the Wild, it turned out to be a major, major, you know, unfortunate play to their best scorer. And now they're going to have to, on a team that has a ton of adversity right now. They're going to have to figure out a way to overcome this now. And again, it's sad. I know that Kaprizov was really looking forward to his first matchup against Alex Ovechkin tomorrow night, and he's not going to get the opportunity to play him.
All right, let's talk about the game real quickly, the game itself, because it's a very nice, a much needed victory and a very nice victory. And then, of course, you have the ready-made built-in angle that you could only be dreaming about, that the local kid ends up with his first goal.
Yep. It was just a storybook game. I mean, you know, first of all, it was really cool. I basically got to introduce the Rossies and the Boldies yesterday. I'd never met each other. And I snapped a bunch of pictures of them. Some they liked, some they didn't, and that's what we chose. I let them be the editors for what I decided to put in The Athletic today. And got to watch them, watch their sons and their brothers do the solo lap. And so that was really awesome. But to your point, I mean, the Wilder, without, you know, Eriksson Ekwood, they're without Spurgeon, they're without Greenway, they're without Duhan, they're without Bukestad, they're without Talbot. And then they lose Kaprizov, and they went out and they played a hard, disciplined, really smart, well-played game. And definitely earned those 2 points yesterday. Kakkonen was outstanding. You know, guys like Connor Duehr were great. Freddie Gaudreau were great. You know, I thought Fiala worked his butt off after taking a retaliatory penalty in the first period. You know, I get he was frustrated. He was hit in the head and by a guy in Marchand that can drive any opponent nuts. But yet they overcame all that and just played a strong, strong game. And then you got the Boldy and the Rossi storylines that made it just an awesome, awesome game. Only he's the first visiting Massachusetts player in his NHL debut to score in his NHL debut in Boston. Pretty awesome story for Matt Boldy.
Capitals tomorrow night?
Yep, Moshman's in town. Yep.
Yeah, here as well. So you're back for that one. What time is that? A 6 o'clock start tomorrow or 7?
I think it's 7.
It's regular time. I should know. We'll have it on the fan. We know that much. And we'll look forward to your coverage on that. And we appreciate the time. We're cutting a little bit short because we got, as it is, Gerbschmidt's bitter because we moved him from 3:30 to accommodate you. And so now he's pouting a little bit. And now there's a new Aaron Rodgers controversy potentially. So we got to get to all of that. So keep in touch.
I know Carl is super, super, super busy.
And very sensitive. So, yeah.
Sorry to inconvenience him.
He claims that he was in on the decision, the Packers personnel decision, to have Aaron Rodgers play in the final regular season game, that he had some discussions with Goody and a couple of the other Packers officials. That's what Carl tells us. He's in the middle of all those because he's an owner, so he's involved in all of those decisions. Yeah, so, you know.
Was Carl one of those, is he potentially that he was one of those people that took off his shirt in the game the other night that I took a picture and put it on Twitter?
Well, he claims he doesn't. He rarely takes his shirt off anymore. But I don't know if that's him not telling it, you know, kind of fibbing because he doesn't want to potentially be identified. It wouldn't shock us. I know he's done it in the past, but I don't know because there were some good photos there, that's for sure.
No, no doubt about it. I enjoyed watching that game. So, yeah, I'll be listening to Carl. I always enjoy him when he's on there.
Thanks, Russo. Be good.
Yep, see ya.
Russo Radio, brought to you by the Pillbox Tavern, joining us on this Friday evening. Generally, we have the picks at 3:30, but we're moving some things around. Carl Gerbschmidt coming up next. Timing's good. A-Rodge, and apparently in the middle of another alleged controversy, and his team's sitting pretty, 13-3. With a chance to go to 14-3, even though they don't need the game, knowing that home ice advantage is theirs through the NFC play.